Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. While we're passing out the books, I'd like to introduce my dear friend Ambarish Prabhu. He is the inspiration and director, I guess, of the Temple of Vedic Planetarium Project, something like that. So that is the, of course, the wonderful, enormous temple that is being built in Sridhar Mayapur. And I understand that you picked Antardam's...
Antardweep.
Yeah,
his model.
So all the planets will be hanging from the ceiling.
Yep.
Oh, that's great. Maybe if time permits, you might say a few words. Or,
okay.
Would you prefer it in the beginning or at the end?
How do you know time is going to permit?
Hare Krishna. Some of you may know about the Temple of Vedic Planetarium in Mayapur. This was a dream of Srila Prabhupada to build this planetarium in Sridhar Mayapur to attract everybody to the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it's the planning has been going on for years, and we finally started last February, and it was supposed to take 2 years to put all. There was 2,800 piles to put in for the foundation. It was supposed to take 2 years. They're almost finished. It's been 8 months. So it's amazing. By the grace of the Lord, things are moving ahead very rapidly. And this will be the new home for Sri Sri Radhamadava, Sri Panchatattva, and the Sringadeva will have his own temple. And there will also be, like you have here, Guru Parampara. So the Kirtan Hall is 1 acre in size. And it'll hold 10,000 people. So it's going to be huge. And it's 350 feet tall. It'll be the largest Hindu temple in the world. So it's pretty awesome. Visit this site, www.tovp.org. Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Well, thank you very much. TOVP, Temple of Vedic Planetarium. There's a nice video on there for you engineering students. You want to see how they're putting in these piles. Sadbuja Prabhu, if you can speak Australian, you can understand what he's saying. But yeah, it's very interesting. These piles, they take something like 8 hours to punch in, to push in one of them.
I think so, yeah.
You know, because the earth is so, it's the Gangian alluvial plain.
Yeah.
So the earth is very unstable. So they have to push in these pillars. What are they, 100? No, 100 meters, is that it?
Yeah, I think even more.
Yeah. And so 24 hours a day, the boom, 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 boom.
I'm not very popular there. It's almost helpful.
One of the devotees from here, Amrita Kaley, is there now, and she was saying, whenever I hear the piles being pounded, I think of Lord Chaitanya's movement spreading all over the world.
Yeah, it does sound like a big mandanga.
Wow. Okay, so our Bhagavatam verses. These are, if you'd like to see. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayanaha agham dunvanti karchnena niharamiva bhaskaraha. Only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. You can do this simply by devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. Tasmat sankirtana vishnor jagan mangalamam tasam mahatam apikonteva vidyana kantika skirtam. My dear King, the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is able to uproot even the reactions of the greatest sins. Therefore, the Sankirtan movement is the most auspicious activity in the entire universe. Please try to understand this so that others will take it seriously. Sri Prahlad Uvacha
Matir na Krishne parata swatova mito vipadyeta griha vratanam adanta gobhir vishatam tamishram bhuna punas charvita charvananam. Prahlad Maharaj replied, because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too addicted to materialistic life make progress towards hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Their inclinations toward Krishna are never aroused, either by the instructions of others, by their own efforts, or by a combination of both. Jai. So today is the auspicious disappearance day of Srila Gaurakishor Das Babaji Maharaj, Hare Krishna. He's on the center of the parampara there on the altar, and his picture is here on the wall so we can meditate on his transcendental form. We have the disappearance days of great acharyas, especially Babaji's, but we don't have their appearance days because their appearance days are unknown. And Gaurakishor Das Babaji's life will be told. We'll read a little history of his life and some of his pastimes and talk a bit about the meaning of Babaji and its relationship to, say, sannyasi. Okay, so first, though, let's begin by singing the pranam mantra to Gaurakishor Das Babaji. And many of these words are fairly simple Sanskrit words, so I'm hoping that everyone can memorize this mantra. We'll chant it a few times to help. Namo Gaurakishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralamba Rasambodhe Padambujayate Namaha. Namo Gora Kishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralamba Rasambodhe Padambujayate Namaha. Namo Gora Kishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralamba Rasambodhe Padambujayate Namaha. What does the word Sakshad mean? From direct, yes, like Sakshad Hari, Vaina Samasta Shastras, directly Hari. And so Sakshad Vairagya, how about that word? Right, renunciations. And Murtaye. Yeah, like a murti, exactly. So Sakshad Vairagya Murti is directly the form of renunciation. Okay. And Vipralamba, remember that? Yes, from the Nectar of Devotion, those who read it? Yeah, it means separation from Krishna. So Vipralamba, rasa. What is a rasa? Yeah, mellow. And then bodhe, sagar. What is the meaning of bodhe? Huh? It's sagar, yes, it means sagar. It means ocean. So rasambodhe, the ocean of the mellows of love of Krishna. And then pada umbujaya. Yeah, pada is what? Yes, umbujaya is lotus feet. So te namaha. So translation together. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Gaurakishor Das Babaji Maharaj, who is renunciation personified. He is always merged in a feeling of separation and intense love of Krishna. What do you think? Can you memorize that one? Remember that? Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye. So, let's see. I apologize, the text is a little tight. Maybe those sitting up in the front can take turns reading. Who would like to start here? Sagarji? Pardon me? Okay. Okay, it would take someone who could operate it better than I. You want to try? Okay. But let's not interrupt the reading. Go ahead, please. Go ahead.
The next in the parampara is the great Paramahansa Babaji by the name of Gaurakishor Das Babaji Maharaj. Technically, he was a disciple of Bhagavad Das Babaji Maharaj, who was a disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. He was the sixth disciple of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
Okay, let's just make sure this is clear to everybody. So, Jagannath Das Babaji is on our far right as we're facing the altar. And his disciple...
Bhagavat Das Babaji. Hey, very good. Now, can you squeeze it in? Yes. Okay. I have faith. You can do it. Bye-bye. actually, you have to, if you go to Zoom, you can do text width. Or, fit and page. Okay. Anyway, while you're working on that, let me just explain. Jagannath Das Babaji was the predecessor of both Bhaktivinod Thakur and Gaurkishore Das Babaji. But they had a very different relationship. Bhaktivinod Thakur was also a Siksha disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji, not a Diksha disciple. And Gaurkishore was a Siksha disciple of Bhaktivinod Thakur, although they were in many respects contemporaries. Bhaktivinod Thakur, in one sense, was kind of a Siksha of Gaurkishore Das also, because he had great respect for him, and so much so that if you've been to Bhaktivinoda's house there across the Jalangi from Mayapur, you'll see that he built a little bhajan kutir for him on his property. He was so fond of him and having his association. So for that reason, Gaurkishore Das Babaji comes after Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They were very much peers, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur considered him a great teacher and therefore referred his son. Who? His son? Right, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. When it was time for his initiation, he referred him to Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj. So as we'll read a bit about that here in just a minute. Okay, next. No. He was the Siksha Guru of Bhaktivinoda. Yes. Bhaktivinoda's Diksha Guru was Vipin Bihar, who was not as advanced a Vaishnava, I think we could say, as Jagannath Das Babaji. So our disciplic line is a Siksha line. And it's not necessarily a Diksha connection with each member of the disciplic succession, you see. So this is a good case in point. Okay. Who's next? Would you like to read Ambarish? No, okay, go ahead. Okay.
In 1897, Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj came to Mayapur, Navadip Dham, from Sri Vrindavan Dham, where he was accredited the exalted title Brahmanandi.
No, Bhajanandi.
Sorry, Bhajanandi.
Uh-huh.
I missed two words.
That's good.
Srila Bhakti Vinod Kedarnath Dutt, seeing the transcendental behavior of Babaji Maharaj, would use him as an example of nirpeksha indifference, as his level of renunciation was beyond belief. This Vaishnav saint's life was an example of utter humility and poverty, the true attributes of a Vaishnav. Gaurkishore never accepted any material object from anyone. For his clothing, he used the discarded loincloths from corpses left on the banks of the Ganges. For food, he would collect rice by begging, soak it in river water, and garnish it with salt and chili. He never asked favors from anyone and lived a fully detached life, devoid of all possessions.
Very little information is available about the past life of Gaurkishore, except that he was born in a Vaishya family in the village of Bhagjana near Tepakhola on the bank of the Padma.
This is all in Bangladesh, what is now Bangladesh, East Bengal.
As a householder, Gaurkishore was known by the name Vamsidas, different from Vamsidas Babaji. At that time, he was engaged in some agricultural trade and from the income took care of his wife and family honestly. After the death of his wife, Gaurkishore renounced his home and went to Vrindavan, where he was initiated into Vairagi Vesha by Bhagavad Das Babaji, one of the most foremost disciples of Jagannath Das Babaji.
So, this Vamsi Das was a contemporary, I believe, of Bhaktisiddhanta. Was he a disciple? No, he was a contemporary. But there's another whole book about his life by Bhakti Vikash Maharaj. But that was his initiated named Vamsi Das. So we get the story here. We know very little about his early life in East Bengal. And when he went to Vrindavan, he adopted this Vairagya Vesh, which means total renunciation, under the tutelage of this Bhagavat Das Babaji. Professor Ji, please go ahead. Yeah. All right, okay.
Srila Gaurakishore lived on Madhukari, begging, and slept beneath a tree. He would lie prostrate, offering his humble obeisances to residents of Braja, considering them as embodiment of Lord Krishna. He even offered his obeisances to the flowers, trees, and land around him.
By the way, the word Madhukari, just explained, means like a bee. The bee will go from flower to flower, taking a little bit of pollen here and there. So these very renounced Vaishnavas will just take a little bit from every home. They won't take too much from anyone. That way they don't become too dependent on any one person.
He spent about 30 years at Braj Mandala, serving the deities there. Afterwards, perhaps by the direction of the Supreme Lord, he left for Navadvipa.
So, his householder life, and then 30 years in Vrindavan, and then he went to Navadvipa.
During his stay at Navadvipa, Gaurakishore underwent various transformations of spiritual moods. Sometimes he danced on the banks of the Ganges chanting, Gaur, Gaur, while at other times he would lie on the ground in a conscious state. He joyfully moved throughout the groves located on the bank of the Ganges, considering them sites of the divine sport of Sri Sri Radha Govinda. His only clothing was a strip of cloth around his waist. He chanted japa on bees, or sometimes knotted a cloth and used that as a substitute for japa bees. Occasionally, he went to Godrumdweep, listened to Bhaktivinoda Thakur recite Srimad Bhagavatam.
Babaji Maharaj would often visit Bhaktivinoda. During his last days in retirement, absorbed in Krishna Katha, he would hear Srimad Bhagavatam at Bhaktivinoda's house and they would discuss together. Though Babaji Maharaj could neither read nor write, he was regarded as vastly learned and self-realized. His only possessions were his tulsi beads around his neck and the japa mala he kept in his hands. Sometimes he wore no tulsi mala on his neck and would chant on knotted cloth as beads. Such was his renunciation. Sometimes he would live under an old broken overturned boat, and at other times he would scatter fish bones around a place he occasionally used as a bhajan kutir to make materialists think that he was a fish eater, and thus they would not disturb him. By his pure bhajan, he purified the three worlds.
Okay, so this was his mood, which I'd just like to comment on for a moment. He had no preaching mission because he was a Babaji. And Babaji are completely dedicated to chanting, and that's all they do. At the same time, he had this oblique mission of exposing all of the bogus Babajis that were very prominent in those days. So many people would make a living, as he did, if you will, as a madhukari, as a beggar, just accepting whatever alms people would give. And in a pious culture, people would gladly give alms because they felt they get a benefit. So, the more pious, the more saintly the Babaji, the more benefit they would get. So many people were taking this role in vocation, but most of them were not strictly following the regulative principles. Srila Prabhupada once commented, remember, he would see a man in his youth. When he was a child, Prabhupada would see this man. He'd come down in his regular clothes, change into sannyas clothes and go out and beg. And then when working hours were over, he'd go back, put on his regular clothes and go home. this was right, Dredra and Orion. So yeah, this was the cheating that Gaurakishore Das Babaji could not tolerate. So he did very extreme things to keep people from coming to him for giving blessings. See? So this was one case. He scattered the fish bones to make people think he was sitting there eating fish in his bhajan kutir, and so it could not possibly be a sadhu. Then on another time, because so many people would come to him, he moved to a latrine. He would actually stay in the latrine. It's described that you and I would not be able to stand the smell for 1 minute, but he would sit there all day and chant in hopes of keeping people away from him. But still they were coming. So he took another tact, and he got a 35-rupee dhoti, very expensive dhoti in those days. And then he put on this very fancy dhoti and would stride around town chanting his japa loudly. Everyone would think, oh, just see this bogus sadhu. So these are some of his strategies for keeping people away so he could just do his bhajan.
Well, what was the purpose of keeping them away?
Because they would want his blessings. And they're always coming to him, asking for blessings, offering him things.
Right, and he didn't want anything.
He didn't want to be bothered by anything.
Also, it's particularly mentioned that the blessings that they were seeking weren't spiritual blessings, but they wanted material blessings. So that was the reason why.
Thank you for clarifying that. Yes, important point. Okay, please go ahead.
In 1908, when Bhaktivedanta, he was the guru of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami, the founder of the Chaitanya Mats and the Gadaya Mats. And in 1898, when Bhaktivedanta's son, who was now residing in Godru Madhvipa and Nadvipa Dham, first came in contact with the person who was to be his spiritual master, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, the crest jewel of
Avadutas, which means renunciates, Gaurakishore.
Was wearing a tiger skin hat and carrying a basket of puja paraphernalia inside. He offered the boy 4 or 5 pieces of rope for chanting his rounds on, and a tilak stamp for marking the body with Hare Krishna carved on it. Bhaktivedanta later told his sons, "You must take initiation from Babaji Maharaj, and don't return to this house if you don't."
Okay, so let's pause there for a moment. Okay, so Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a number of children, 11 or 13 children, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was one of the middle ones, but he was particularly astute and oriented towards spirituality. By the time he was 7, he had memorized the entire Bhagavad Gita and could explain its verses. So Bhaktivinoda had prayed for a ray of Vishnu and considered that this son, Bimal Prasad, or Bhaktisiddhanta, as he was to become, was the answer to that prayer. So he wanted his son to be properly initiated. And it's important to understand that at this time, Vaishnavism was a very disreputable occupation or belief system. In the general public's mind, anyone who was a Vaishnav was more or less a bum, and worse, a rogue, or somebody who was exploiting women and the innocent public for money. So Vaishnavism was very, very degraded. Bhaktivinoda Thakur went through a whole search of all the philosophies of the world before he finally concluded that Vaishnavism, as taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was the highest expression of spirituality. He was a great scholar. But when he had that epiphany in his 30s, Bhaktivinoda became a very staunch Vaishnava. And he would seek the best possible association amongst other Vaishnavas of his time. So he regarded Jagannath Das Babaji and Gaurakishore Das Babaji as the best association that was available to him. Therefore, when his son was due to be initiated, he referred him to Gaurakishore. So this story only is told in brief here. I'd just like to elaborate a little bit. He told his son to get initiated by Gaurakishore, and he went to Gaurakishore Das Babaji, who said, "I can't possibly initiate you. You're a very learned scholar, and I can't even read." So Bhaktisiddhanta went back to his father and reported this, and then his father told him, "Don't come back without the initiation." So I think Bhaktisiddhanta was about 20 at this time, you know, a young man. So the rest of the story then goes on from that point.
Also, it's described that he approached Srila Gaur Kishore many times. Mm. Sometimes it says 11 times, 12 times, and he kept going back over and over again, asking for initiation.
That's right. One time, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji said, "Okay, I shall ask. I shall have to go and ask." Was it Lord Chaitanya? His deity?
Yeah,
he had a little deity. So I'll have to go ask Mahaprabhu. And so the next time Bhakti Siddhanta saw him, he said, "What did Mahaprabhu say?" He said, "I don't know, I forgot to ask him." And again, he asked him, and Gaur Kishore said, "No," he said, "No." So I believe it was at this point that the following incident takes place. So who's next? Gopal?
Gaur Kishore Das Babaji used to walk across a bridge at the same time daily. So on the occasion, Bhakti Vinod's son, Siddhanta Saraswati, blocked his path and in all humility said, "If you don't give me initiation, then I will finish my life by throwing this useless body off this bridge." Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj didn't want any disciples. He himself had taken Shiksha from Bhakti Vinod, and this was Bhakti Vinod's dear son. Siddhanta Saraswati told him how his father had instructed him to become Babaji Maharaj's disciple or not return home. So in 1900, Babaji Maharaj gave him the name Varsa Barnava Devi Daichidas. He then gave his new initiate a tiger skin hat and basket that had been given to Gaur Kishore by his spiritual master, Bhagavad Das Babaji, which he in turn had received from Jagannath Das Babaji.
I wonder where that hat is now. By the way, that name, Varsha Banavi Devi, anyone know what that means? Who is Varsha Banavi?
It's the name of our highest.
Yes. Very good. Yes, Varsha Banavi Devi Dayata, the dear one to Radharani.
In 1908, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj lost his external eyesight, so he then stopped traveling and just chanted and performed worship of Krishna. Being aloof from external consciousness, sometimes he would barely dress his body. Instead, he would sit in his bhajan kutir, internally absorbed in Krishna's pastimes, and in a very deep voice, be heard calling the names of the gopis of Vrindavan. Once Srila Varsha Banavi Devi Daita Das Siddhanta Saraswati offered to take Babaji Maharaj to Calcutta to see an eye specialist, but he refused, saying, "Never, I will never go to the material world." His disciple protested, "But in Calcutta I could serve you nicely. You wouldn't have to undergo any inconvenience." But Babaji Maharaj was adamant, declaring, "I will never accept this service. Better I throw myself in the Saraswati Jalangi and drown."
So he turned it on his disciple. His disciple said, "If you don't accept me, I'm going to drown myself in the river."
Once Babaji Maharaj turned up at the yoga pit, Lord Chaitanya's birthplace, at 2 in the morning. Amazed, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati inquired how he got there in the pitch black of night. Babaji Maharaj replied, "Someone brought me here. Who could have brought you such a distance at this time?" inquired Bhaktisiddhanta. Finally, his mind concluded, "It must have been Krishna who personally brought you here, or else how did you cross the Ganges? How did you find your way across the dark fields?" But Babaji Maharaj would not answer more than, "One person brought me across the river, that's all."
One day, Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj wrapped his body and 2 feet with a cloth. Sitting covered like this, he said, "Many persons, after being informed by others, come here to collect the dust from my feet. I tell them, I am not a Vaishnava. If you go to the vicinity where there are Vaishnavas with their feet pretentiously decorated and extended to touch, you can have unlimited dust. How can I bless you? I don't have burfi or sandesh or rasgulla or even sweet words. How can I bless you? Nowadays, people are interested in spiritual matters. Who can give these things? Wealth, good wife, sweet, sweet, sweet words, these cheating things are now taken as anukula, favorable.
Every virtuous person looked forward to rendering service to Srila Gorkishore. However, he rarely allowed anyone the chance to serve him. Once, Manindrachandra Nandi, the Maharaj of Kashim Bazar, sent a distinguished messenger to escort Gorkishore to the former's palace. Gorkishore, however, did not accept the Maharaj's invitation, saying that if he visited the palace, he may feel tempted by the wealth of the Maharaj, which may result in a strained relation between the two. Hence, Gorkishore suggested that instead of him visiting the palace, let the Maharaj free himself completely. From the shackles of wealth by donating everything he owned to his relatives and then come to live with Gorkishore in a specially prepared shed where both of them could practice Hari Bhajan in peace.
Yes. That was, let's see, a little bit more to this. The king was inviting him, please come, and he just turned him down, and then the king came and a little insulted and said, why are you not accepting my invitation? Am I not good enough for you? And so he gave this response. Actually, the king said to him, I will do, please come, I will do whatever you tell me to do. And Gorkishore said, if you will do whatever I tell you to do, then you just give everything away and move in here with me right now. And at least in one version it's described that the king ran away.
Srila Gorkishore was very selective about accepting invitations for food. He believed that partaking of food here and there could adversely affect the spiritual life of a devotee. Once a devotee named Harim Babu partook of prasad offered at the festival held at Bhajan Kutir at Navadweep. For this, Gorkishore stopped communicating with Harim for 3 days. On the fourth day, Gorkishore explained that the prasad of the above festival had been financed by a woman of questionable profession, a pumskari, one who is moved by other men. Once, on the eve of Sanatan Goswami's disappearance day, Gorkishore decided to celebrate the occasion. The devotee attending him asked who would provide them with the materials for the celebration. Srila Gorkishore replied, remember not to speak to anyone about it. We shall miss a meal and continue around the clock chanting the holy name. This could be the typical festival for those of us who have taken the vow of poverty.
Narendra Kumarasen, a resident of Argarthal, once approached Gorkishore to learn about Guru Pranali or Siddha Pranali. Gorkishore told him, the Supreme Lord cannot be realized through worldly knowledge. Only through the chanting of the holy name can the true nature of the Lord be revealed. As the Lord is revealed from the letters comprising the Nam, the devotee gradually begins to understand his own nature and becomes acquainted with Seva.
So this Siddha Pranali is the body that you have in the spiritual world. And some unauthorized teachers will say, yes, I can tell you who you will be in the spiritual world, your Siddha Pranali. So this was his response. He said, you will discover yourself through chanting the holy name and not through just some theoretical knowledge of it.
Once a physician told Gorkishore that he intended to move to Navadweep and take up charitable practices, Gorkishore advised the physician that if he truly desired to live in Navadweep, then he should give up the plan for charitable practice because it would only encourage materially minded people to save money. Those who sincerely practice Hari Bhajan should never get distracted by the chains of welfare activities. A young seeker wearing only copina,
underwear.
Once stayed with Gorkishore for some days. Later he arranged through the agency of an employee of a female estate owner to obtain 5 khatas of land as a donation for the woman. When Gorkishore heard about this, he was extremely annoyed. Navadweep Dham is beyond the material world. How can a worldly landowner dare to hold land here and even think he can donate 5 khatas out of it? A mere grain of sand of the transcendental Navadweep is more valuable than all the precious gems in the world put together. Moreover, how advanced could this young copina-clad devotee be if he dares to play such so much land in lieu of his bhajan merit.
Once a devotee offered some sweets to Lord Gauranga and then took the offering to Gaurakishore, urging him to partake of it. Gaurakishore told the devotee, "Those who are non-vegetarian, those who commit adultery or offer food to Lord Gauranga with a particular motive, their offerings never reach Lord Gauranga and are never sanctified as prasad." Giri Babu and his wife once ardently requested Gaurakishore to stay in their house at Navadweep. Gaurakishore was moved by... their sincere devotion, and finally agreed to oblige them on the condition that he would live only in their toilet room, where he would perform Hari Bhajan. Giri Babu tried to persuade him to change his mind, but Gaurakishore remained firm. Giri Babu reluctantly arranged to have the toilet thoroughly cleaned, and Gaurakishore used it for Hari Bhajan. A realized soul can practice Hari Bhajan anywhere in an unconcerned manner, and wherever he resides, that place becomes Vaikuntha.
Srila Gaurakishore was a highly spiritually advanced soul. He never allowed deceitful practices or any discussion which was not within the purview of the holy books. One day, when a devotee questioned Gaurakishore about a well-known reciter of Srimad Bhagavatam, who was in the habit of chanting Gora, Gora, Gaurakishore remarked, "He doesn't say Gora, Gora. Rather, what he means to say is more, more, money, money. Those who recite Srimad Bhagavatam for payment are not entitled to chant the name of the Supreme Lord."
Srila Gaurakishore never delivered discourses openly, yet his spotless character drew everyone to him. Upon meeting Gaurakishore, even a staunch materialist would become inclined to take up Hari Bhajan.
This is kind of summarized here, so I'd like to expand on his departure. It says that he passed from this world on the auspicious Uttana Ekadasi. So I don't know exactly why that Ekadasi is being observed tomorrow. There's some astrological reason, I'm sure. there's an important pastime associated with his departure. During his life, Gaurakishore would go throughout the town of Navadweep and say, or he was often heard to say by many people, "When I die, drag my body through the streets of Navadweep so that everyone can see the fate of a non-Vaishnava." So he's expressing his extreme humility in this way. So after he left, some unscrupulous people wanted to actually do that. When he left this world, they wanted to take his body and drag it through the street, and then entomb it in a samadhi on their temple property so that they would attract more visitors and donations from having the samadhi of this great saint. See? So there was actually a competition among the temple holders in Navadweep to get that body. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta appeared on site during the discussion. And it was so tumultuous that the police were there also to try to settle the argument. So Bhakti Siddhanta, who was, again, a fairly young man at this time in his mid-30s, presented himself and said, "Wait, I am the only disciple of Gaurakishore Das Babaji." But that did not entitle him, according to this crowd's opinion, to take the body and create a proper samadhi. So then he responded by saying, "All right, my Guru Maharaj was pure, but anyone who's going to touch his transcendental body must therefore also be pure. So anyone here who has not had illicit connection with women in the last year may step forward and claim my Guru Maharaj's body." So the policeman was there and he said, How will you tell? He said, "I will take them at their word." So nobody stepped forward. He said, okay, anyone who's been pure for the last 6 months, 1 month, 1 week, 3 days. So then they all turned around and went home. So Bhaktisiddhanta built a very beautiful samadhi, very humble but beautiful. You've been there, that samadhi there in Mayapur. And I believe it had to be moved, if I'm not mistaken, because of the flooding later on. So, but my understanding was the story occurred at the time of his departure. Anyway, the Samadhi of Gorkhashore is a beautiful place. When you go to Mayapur, I hope you'll have the chance to have darshan there. This apparently is the only image of Gorkhashore Das Babaji, the one that's used for the little murti and the picture. There is no other, and the murti there at his Samadhi is exactly the same pose. But it's a very nice, tranquil and spiritual place where you can sit and have kirtan, chant japa. If I recall, it's right on the banks of a kund, Shyamakund. And that is all in the Yoga Pit compound, or is it in the Chaitanya Math compound? Chaitanya Math compound, where Bhaktisiddhanta Samadhi is also, correct? Yes, so they have Radhakund, Shyamakund, and Govardhan Hill, which is about as big as this room and maybe as tall. But this, an offense to consider Mayapur and Navadvip is different. So the Radhakund, Shyamakund, and Govardhan are just as good in Mayapur as in Vrindavan. So just there is the Samadhi of Gorkhashore and Bhaktisiddhanta Samadhi as well. So are there any questions about this great personality in our lineage? this is... Yeah, as is Jagannath Das Babaji, this is kind of the pose and the mood of the Babaji. Their only business is chanting. Just imagine if you did nothing else but chant rounds all day, every day. You know, and so there.
This comes from a photograph.
Oh, it is a photograph.
Yeah, I looked on the internet,
and there is a photograph that all these images are taken from. So I'm sure that if he didn't want people touching his feet, he didn't want people taking his photograph either, you know. So I think he was trying to avoid the camera, you know.
How is Babaji given? Is that title given? And how did he come to this sort of this stage of...
Babaji is an initiation, an order of life, in which one does nothing but chant. And that's the vow that one takes. In Chicago in 1975, there was a devotee. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was ostensibly he.
Yeah.
he had been diagnosed as having a terminal brain tumor. Yeah. So Prabhupada awarded him Babaji, and he was initiated and wore the white cloth, more like a gumsha than a dhoti, and his service was just to chant Hare Krishna for the rest of his life. But he recovered from the tumor, apparently, or the disease, and then he gave up the vow. So it's a very difficult vow to take. That's the point. Once Srila Prabhupada was asked, a disciple asked Prabhupada, when we're older, can we retire in Mayapur and just chant? And Prabhupada said, you can do that. I am not advanced enough.
It's not really part of our tradition.
No, it doesn't. He said, I just want to die on the battlefield. Give me the right to die on the battlefield like Arjuna.
Yeah.
So this is the difference between the Bhajananandi and Goshtyananandi. These are two categories of Vaishnavas, and they're both exalted. In our recent disciplic succession, there are two Bhajananandis and three Goshtyanandis, you see. So as I mentioned, Gorkhashore Das Babaji was... he was teaching Krishna consciousness, but by his precept rather than by giving instruction. He agreed to give instruction only to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, only this one disciple. And at the same time, he instructed everyone by his life. So there's a beautiful section in the Chaitanya Charitamrita when I believe it's Sanatana Goswami is glorifying Haridas Thakur. Any pundits can correct me. he says, some people preach, but they do not behave nicely. Or some people behave nicely, but they do not preach. But because you preach and behave nicely, you are the most advanced devotee in the world. That was in reference to Haridas Thakur, right? So Haridas Thakur was, in a sense, a Babaji also, but he would go out and distribute Krishna consciousness on the order of Lord Nityananda, or in the order of Lord Chaitanya, excuse me. And Haridas would go from person to person, door to door. So the Babajis don't do that. And as a result, they are able to exhibit the qualities of the topmost devotee, which is called, of the three categories, the Uttama Adhikaris. Right, so the Uttama Adhikari is distinguished by being unable to distinguish between the various types of people that he sees. So a Kanishta, a beginning devotee, also has this quality. They can't distinguish. Okay, here's my Hare Krishna friend, and here's my college friend, and I can hang out with him or hang out with him, and it's all one. See? But actually the effect of that association is very different. But the beginner will not recognize that. Or also we see sometimes people will say, yes, I can hang out with the devotee, or I can hang out with this impersonalist teacher, and you know, it's all kind of spiritual and it's all good. That's a very common phenomenon. And that's fine. That's characteristic of a beginner. But as one progresses, then one becomes a what? Madhyama. And what's the quality of a Madhyama Adhikari? They can discriminate, exactly. They can tell the difference. This person's association will help me, and this person's association is going to be bad for me. So then when one advances to the top stage, again, loses that power of discrimination. So as far as the Paramahamsa or the Uttama Adhikari is concerned, everybody is more advanced, and therefore they cannot give instruction to anybody. The Madhyama will see, this person is less advanced, I can instruct this person. This person is more advanced, I can take instruction. But the Uttama Adhikari sees everyone is more advanced. So I cannot, who can I instruct? It is an expression of extreme humility and not to be imitated. See, it's not that just by refusing to instruct anyone or by living under an upturned boat or scattering fish bones outside our ashram or whatever, you know, that these are symptoms of someone with extreme love of God, but just doing them does not bring love of God. So these are symptoms that come naturally and are not to be imitated. But still, it's important to understand they are truly manifest in a devotee like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji.
I was wondering, we are in the setup and it's obviously we have a very different setup from those old times when where Babaji is like, I was wondering, like, what should we derive? Like, obviously, he's a great devotee, but like, maybe if you can be more specific for Krishna house, maybe for students and for the brahmacharis here, what can we derive from the life of Varshadasavaji? Some few points.
First of all, everyone residing in Krishna house should eat soaked rice with salt and chili. This will save us considerably on our You know, there is a verse in the first canto, which you may remember, it was one of our memorization verses, 127. Does anyone remember that verse? Vasudevi. Very good. And the translation is, by rendering devotional service, what happens? Yes, one immediately develops causeless knowledge and detachment. So, ahoitiki. So, we can understand from Gaur Kishore's life that there is that detachment is part of the life of a devotee. At the same time, it is not the only quality of life of a devotee, nor is it the only way to live one's life as a devotee. So it's an opulence, it's a bhushanam, it's a jewel on the crown of a devotee's life, that is detachment. But that detachment may take the form of extreme renunciation or of using everything for Krishna's service. So it is a quality of a Kanishta to make that kind of distinction. If this person is really advanced because really renounced, whereas this person is not so advanced because they have a nice car. But the Madhyama or above can see that, well, both devotees are equal because they're engaging everything they have in Krishna's service. So it is it's a beautiful thing about our Sampradaya that we have both these Babajis and these Goshtiyanandis who used everything for Krishna's service. What was the Prabhupada talked about this one particular yogi who was renowned for saying, whenever anyone brought him money, he would say, no, I cannot accept, I cannot touch. And so Prabhupada scoffed and said, if you bring money to a Vaishnava, then he will take it all and then come back the next day with a wheelbarrow. So we take it, and he will say that, yes, I have spent everything you gave me yesterday for Krishna. Now please give me more. So this kind of renunciation is called what by Rupa Goswami? Yukta Vairagya. Yes. Yes. Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Devotion that if something can be used for Krishna and it is not so used, that's called Palgu Vairagya, which means dry renunciation. And this, there's a river in India known as the Palgu, and the quality of this particular river is it appears to be just a dry riverbed. But if you dig underneath a little bit, then there's water. So it's called the Palgu, or dry river. And this dry renunciation is like that. Externally, one may be very detached. But if you dig a little bit, then there's so much attachment. See? So this is Palgu Bhairagya. You say, I will not accept, I will not use this. This is just imitating such devotees as Gaura Kishore. So actual renunciation means taking everything and using it in Krishna service.
Like we learned that spiritual life is dormant in nature, and we have like so many dormant activities going on. So in what sense devotional service of Gaura Kishore Babaji Maharaj was dormant? Like how can we understand the dormant? Like there's some action going on all the time.
I mean, yes, one of the qualities of a devotee in bhava or preliminary love of God is not to waste time for a moment. The devotee is always active in Krishna's service. So what is the verse in Bhagavad Gita that answers this question? One of the most paradoxical verses of the Gita. Yes, is wise among men. Remember that verse? One who sees action in inaction, and inaction and action is wise among men. In fact, if you can even say it, you're wise among men. So what that means is that the people will look at devotees, even at us, and say, okay, here you are spending so much time chanting Hare Krishna every day when you could be checking your portfolio or delivering an extra pizza or doing something to earn more money. You see? They see it as a waste of time. So, but a person who is tuned in will see, to spiritual life, will see, okay, this activity is actually very dynamic. Chanting, beating down the mind, wait, no, rebelling against one's conditioned life and experiencing Krishna in the moment. That's a very dynamic experience, you see. So there's action in inaction. And then inaction in action. Well, people are working very hard, but where are they going? You know, like the hamster on the wheel. They get the little hamster wheels for exercise for your little feral pet, and they run and run and run and run, but they never go anywhere. So a life pursuing materialism is just like that. It is so active and so busy, and people are working so hard, but they're not changing anything. They're just getting ready for a new body, the next birth. So action and inaction, and inaction and action. So the external quality of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji's devotional service is very different than that of Goshtini and Nandi, who want to go out and spread the word and meet people and hold programs and have Sankirtan and distribute prasadam, you know, so many activities. We should be very cautious to both understand and respect the devotional service of Gaur Kishore, and at the same time not try to imitate it. There was a devotee who he was from Africa, I believe, and he wanted to just chant Hare Krishna all day. This was in 1974 or 75, I think, or in the Mayapur festival. So he came, and he walked all the way from Africa to Mayapur. He had to take a boat at some point, but he it was a big thing, and he was the talk of the festival. This person is doing all these incredible austerities. He just sits and chants all day. You know, he's chanting 100 rounds, 120 rounds. And devotees were thinking he was very advanced. And then he created more of a sensation by declaring that he was just going to stay in a tree in Mayapur. He just moved, so he was just sitting in the tree and chanting all day. And that's when it came to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, "It's nonsense." He said, "Well, Prabhupada, he wants to stay in the tree so that he won't waste any time talking to any of the other devotees." Prabhupada said, "This is nonsense." And he just kind of ignored this person. And after a while, the person got down out of the tree and walked away, and no one ever saw him again. So, did not get the blessings of his spiritual master. Garrison, is it a follow-up question?
How is it? What's the proper perspective for you speaking of how they have a shiksha parampara in a sense that he rejected Vipin Bihari, and how we could use that to justify that we're getting shiksha from Srila Prabhupada, so we can kind of. So how?
That's a very good question. The question was, since Bhaktivinoda Thakur is considered a siksha member of our sampradaya, his diksha guru not being a member of our disciplic succession, then what is to stop somebody from saying, "Well, I will just take siksha from Srila Prabhupada and therefore be a disciple of Prabhupada in disciplic succession, or Sukadeva Goswami, or whomever one may choose, you know?" As far as Srila Prabhupada is concerned, the answer to that question is that he directed us to take shelter of his disciples. And that was his order. So if we're going to be his follower, then we have to follow his order. "Well, I want to be his follower, but I don't want to follow his order." See, that's why this very notion that you're describing is popular in some quarters. Because if you take Prabhupada as your siksha guru and therefore he's my only authority, then I can basically do whatever I like within certain parameters of Prabhupada's teachings. But I know for most of us who were fortunate to get diksha from Srila Prabhupada, I mean, I saw Srila Prabhupada, but I never talked to him prior to getting diksha. And I know he didn't know me. But he knew my temple president, and my temple president recommended me, and so Prabhupada wrote back, "On your recommendation, I am accepting such and such as my disciple." You see? So, for those who want to take Prabhupada as their guru, as their link with the disciplic succession, well then, where's the letter? You know? He made it clear from the beginning, and it was always like that for most of us, that we would take his association through his disciples. And the ideal situation is that one takes diksha and siksha from the same person. Prabhupada states that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because then it's a very personal relationship. Remember that in the ideal Vaishnav culture. There are gurus in every village, in every corner, and in every neighborhood, and bona fide, authorized representatives of the disciplic succession who are selflessly giving the knowledge, right? So this is somebody that you can know, that you can associate with, that you that will know you well. But in Kali Yuga, it's difficult to find that kind of situation, right? So Prabhupada had accepted thousands of disciples, although it's specifically advised in the Shastra that one should not accept many disciples. But Prabhupada took that risk because who else was going to do it? And he considered inviting some of his godbrothers even to help him. He invited one senior godbrother to be the president of ISKCON. And the devotee, you know, the godbrother refused. And that was pretty much the pattern. Prabhupada asked over and over again, many, many godbrothers, please come and help this way, that way, the other way. They all refused. And then they started stealing his disciples. And they stole them on this very precept that you're asking about. Yes, there are so many gurus. And you can get siksha from him, or you can get siksha from me, and then I can give you diksha also. You know, it's the same knowledge. But Prabhupada was once asked, after your departure, could we invite one of your godbrothers to lead ISKCON? This was in the very early days, after a year or two of the movement. And Prabhupada thought about that question and then teared up. Mukunda Maharaj told me this story. It was he who asked the question. He said that Prabhupada said, my Guru Maharaj was no ordinary spiritual master. He saved me. So that was all. That's all he said. So he saved me. My spiritual master was no ordinary spiritual master. He saved me. So Prabhupada was implying by that that he is the one who has made the effort to come and and bring Krishna consciousness to the West. So to say that anybody could step in and do it is, you know, it's offensive. Thank you. Is that why everyone in ISKCON takes Srila Prabhupada as our Siksha Guru? Absolutely, yes. He is the preeminent Siksha Guru for everyone in ISKCON. Founder Acharya. At the same time, he never said, just take me as your Siksha Guru and also as your Diksha Guru. Just as when some of his disciples wanted to read Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's books, Prabhupada stopped them. He did not want them. He said, you cannot jump over. So similarly, to jump over Prabhupada's disciples to Prabhupada and say, now I am on the same level as Prabhupada's disciples is an offense. Yes. Yes, it's a concoction. And unfortunately, after the disappearance of the Acharya, all of these concoctions arise. In the fourth canto, this is explained. So, in practical terms, in ISKCON, after Prabhupada's departure, the gurus were more prominent than the GBC. Although Prabhupada had left the leadership responsibility on the GBC and not the gurus. So it took about 10 years to, you know, get that corrected, to get the ship righted, where the GBC, where no guru in ISKCON has authority over, has absolute authority, you know, over disciples or anybody. And the GBC, if you want to follow Prabhupada, then you follow through the agency of the GBC, because that is his stated heir. So the philosophy that you just described and others kind of like it are basically saying, no, we don't accept the GBC, we want to just accept Prabhupada. So Prabhupada once said, if you love me, love my dog. A few of his books Prabhupada gave us permission to publish and read, like the Brahma Samhita. But basically, most of Bhaktisiddhanta's books, if you read, has anyone read the biography of Bhaktisiddhanta? Yeah. So, what do you think, Jita? After about 6 months. Yeah, it's very hard to understand. Even Prabhupada said he couldn't understand. So, but I would go on listening anyway. So what would happen was, practically, was Prabhupada's disciples, the first ones who went to India, would go. They stayed in the ashrams of his godbrothers and developed a sort of artificial affinity for Bhaktisiddhanta and then took initiation from his godbrothers. And Prabhupada was not pleased with that. So he told him to stop. Please.
I was just wondering, you know, usually you think the disciple is going to take on the mood of the spiritual master, yet Gorkhasura and Bhakti Siddhanta seem to have very peers, opposite moods. And so I was just wondering if there's any, if you know of any direct instructions from Gorkhasura to Bhakti Siddhanta about missionary work or encouragement in doing that.
We have to understand this whole part of Vaishnav history. Vaishnavism became glorious at the time of Lord Chaitanya, then it gradually diminished. Like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who wrote the Guruvastakam prayers, was a monk just living in an ashram, and you know, it was not a very widespread movement, and the purity had been diminished, and so many Kali people had cheated in the name of Vaishnavism. So there was no Vaishnav movement at the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He made some modest attempts to start them, but mostly he concentrated on putting the teachings in clear, understandable language for everybody in English and in Bengali. So he passed away in 1914, and Gorkhasura passed away in 1915. So Bhaktisiddhanta was maybe, you know, again in his mid-30s at that time, or maybe late 20s, a relatively young man. There was no society of devotees. His two shelters were gone. So he determined that the vision of his father was to establish that you know, people from all over the world would come to Mayapur and chant the holy name. So that was going to require an organization. So he sat down in front of a picture of Gorkhasura and gave himself sannyas and started the preaching movement. But that was actually after 10 years of sitting in a hut in Mayapur and chanting 192 rounds, I think, right? Yeah, so this was the mood of his Guru Maharaj. For 10 years he did that. But then afterwards, he gave himself sannyas and started the preaching mission. So we can understand this is the prerogative of an acharya to adjust things according to the time and circumstance. Okay? Srila Gorkhasura Das Babaji Ki Jai.